What?
What?
Let me ask you this.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Sports Central. Chicago Sports Conversation with Adam Hogue.
Go.
This is Sports Central.
Go.
On demand and streaming live on WGNRadio.com.
Welcome in. This is Sports Central live on Radio Row in Minneapolis. It is Tuesday, January 30th, 2018, and very excited to officially bring back Sports Central to WGN and do it in a place like this, the central spot in the sports world right now with the Super Bowl going on this week. Patriots and Eagles, of course. We'll talk a little bit about that today and throughout the week. Got plenty of guests coming up. Orlando Pace, the former Bear, will join me today. Also, Paul Allen. If you don't know who Paul Allen is, you probably heard his voice a couple weeks ago when the Vikings beat the New Orleans Saints. He's the play-by-play voice for the Vikings, and he had the call of the Minneapolis Miracle. And quite frankly, he's sad. And we're going to talk to him a little bit about what's going on with the Vikings and how they have to now turn around and host this game this week, which the locals here in Minnesota are pretty bummed out about. And Paul will talk to us a little bit about that. So first of all, a few words on the show. My name is Adam Hogue. You've probably heard me on WGN countless times talking about the Bears or on the beat on the weekends, talking about all Chicago sports. But I got my start here at WGN almost 10 years ago. It was 2008, and I was producing, and it will first start as an intern, then producing Sports Central. Back then it was with David Kaplan hosting, and it was just a great way to bring you all of the sports every single day, not only just talking about it in Chicago, but the interviews that we have. WGN has a ton of sports content throughout the day, and we hope that this new version of Sports Central will kind of be the hub for all of our content, whether it's stuff I'm giving you, whether it's stuff from Steve Cochran in the morning, or Bill and Wendy, who we just talked to, or Ro Khan, or Justin Kaufman, who I've been doing a bunch of Bear shows with this year, and you're going to hear from Justin Kaufman on this show down the line as well. So the way this works is we're kind of calling this a daily podcast. And the reason we're a live podcast, I should say, because we want you to be able to listen to this however you want. If you want to listen live on the stream, we're going to be here 1 to 2 p.m. every single day, Central Time. And that'll give you the opportunity to chime in. If you want to call in, the phone number is 312-235-2525. You are free to call in on any topic that we discuss or really anything you want to discuss, and we can take your phone call. So doing it live allows us to do that. But if you haven't heard the Hogue and Johns podcast that we do about the Chicago Bears, we've had a lot of success with it. I co-hosted with Adam Johns, and we just want to keep pushing out more and more podcast content because we know a lot of you love listening to your shows that way. So as soon as the show is over at 2 o'clock every day, we're going to turn it around for you really quickly. And that's why it's an hour long, because it's perfect for a podcast length. And you can download it on iTunes or the Google Play Store or TuneIn, really anywhere you listen to your podcast. It's available for you as soon as the show ends. But we are here at Radio Row, and the way we are going to start all of these shows is with our top story, what we're calling the lead. Joe Romano is our producer, and right now let's jump into today's lead.
To be honest with you, I don't remember why he left and I went to Europe to play. And as you know, I'll still say I'll cooperate with any investigation that's made. I did it then, I did it before. And I'm not going to answer any questions that aren't pertaining to either basketball or things that I am not going to talk about right now.
Let me ask you this question then. Looking back at the way sexual assault allegations have been handled by your basketball program, do you have any regrets?
I've cooperated every investigation, every one. And I will continue to cooperate with every investigation, everyone.
Tom Izzo on Sunday after Michigan State beat Maryland in the Washington, D.C. area, being grilled by an Outside the Lines reporter from ESPN, and Outside the Lines has done tremendous work on what's going on at Michigan State University. We may be at the Super Bowl right now, but we're still going to be covering the top stories around the country and in the Chicago area, whether it's football or not this week. And I don't certainly the most important story is not the Super Bowl. It is what is continuing to go on in East Lansing and all the mistakes that happen to basically answer this question. How did Larry Nassar happen? How did he get away with his crimes for so long? And this piece from Outside the Lines that came out on Friday is so in-depth and brings up so many questions about Tom Izzo, Mark D'Antonio, and what I wanted to do today is really just kind of go through the highlights of this report to make sure everyone is informed. And unfortunately, it's sad that this is happening again. I covered the Penn State scandal very, very closely a few years ago, and it's something that just keeps popping into my head over the last couple weeks. But really, since this Outside the Lines story came out, the depth of how far this goes into not only the athletic department at Michigan State, but also the entire university. In the wake of what happened at Penn State, within the own Big Ten Conference, how could this possibly happen? And really what the Outside the Lines report showed us is that this goes way beyond 2011 when the Penn State stuff happened. This was going on before that. And so that's how it happened. It was already too late when Penn State, when the crimes at Penn State came out, it was too late to really fix what was going on at Michigan State, which may explain why they were so protective and why they were so unwilling to give up information. So I highlighted a bunch of stuff from this Outside the Lines report to just kind of show you the depth of how far this went and really what it means. And in one case, a university-hired outside investigator claimed to have not even generated a written report at the conclusion of that person's work. So this is a quote-unquote outside investigator that couldn't even come up with a written report on what he was looking into. Meanwhile, Michigan State fighting in court three different times, unsuccessfully, by the way, to withhold names of athletes and campus police records. Really, just making you wonder, why were they so scared to let this information get out? Now, a big question since Friday is how much Mark D'Antonio and Tom Izzo have to do with this. And so just kind of focusing on that for a second. This from the Outside the Lines report. Since D'Antonio's tenure began in 2007, at least 16 Michigan State football players have been accused of sexual assault or violence against women, according to interviews and public records obtained by Outside the Lines. So what did D'Antonio do wrong? Well, that's still a little bit unclear. But as recently as June, D'Antonio faced a crowd of reporters who were asking questions about four of his football players who had been accused of sexual assault. And six questions in, a reporter asked D'Antonio how he had handled such allegations previously. And he said, quote, "This is new ground for us. We've been here 11 years. It has not happened previously." And according to this Outside the Lines report, that's just a blatant lie. So it makes you wonder why D'Antonio lied when asked that question back in June. Then there's the Michigan State sexual assault counselor, Lauren Allsweet, who left the university in 2015 over frustrations about how the administrators handled sexual assault cases and complaints involving athletes who were routinely investigated and handled by athletic director Mark Hollis's department and sometimes even coaches. That was what she had a problem with, which I think everyone should be able to agree on, that athlete or not an athlete at a university, it should be handled the same way, these investigations. It, just because you're an athlete, it should not go to the athletic director to decide. And obviously, Lauren Allsweet had a problem with this and ended up leaving the university over it back in 2015, which shows you if the sexual assault counselor is leaving the university because she's uncomfortable with how things are being handled, there's a problem. And that was a few years ago, while Larry Nassar, by the way, is still on campus, seeing patients. In the Nassar case, this according to the Outside Lines report, campus police and Michigan State's Title IX office did not formally began investigating him until 2014. That's 17 years after the first complaint was made, originally made to a Michigan State coach. And AllSuite says the attorney told her how D'Antonio, the football coach, had dealt with a sexual assault accusation against one of his players. This is according to AllSuite. She said he had the player talk to his mother about what he had done. And AllSuite said, that did not reassure me at all. There's no guarantee that that had any effect, any help, whatever. And just continuing to scroll through this report, some of the other details that I think you need to know, and this goes now to the basketball program and Tom Izzo's involvement, which you heard the clip from Izzo taking questions on Sunday. But it goes back to Travis Walton, who was a player on Michigan State and then became a member of the coaching staff, and it starts with a situation where Walton was in a bar talking to a woman named Ashley Thompson, who at that point was a junior at Michigan State, and they're at this bar to memorialize a friend who had died in a car crash, and basically just a group of friends getting together to memorialize a friend when Travis Walton shows up and basically tries to get Ashley Thompson's attention, and according to her words, I told him to not so politely F off. And she says, I barely got the words out of my mouth, and he came across and he struck me on the right side of my face. I kind of reached back toward him and I didn't make contact, and then that's when he swung with a second reach and hit me on the left side of my face and hit me so hard that it knocked me backwards off my bar stool. On April 21st, 2010, almost 3 weeks after the Spartans lost to Butler in the Final Four that year, Walton's assault and battery case, because the police obviously did look into this, was dismissed, and he instead pleaded guilty to a civil infraction for littering. So that turned into littering. How does that happen is the big question here. Is it because he's on the basketball team? And by the way, the case file is no longer available from the city attorney's office. Thompson says someone in the city attorney office told her not to talk to the media or to anyone at Michigan State about the incident, so she did not report it to university officials. And that's just the start of the trouble involving Walton, who later comes up in a sexual assault report made by a woman and her parents to the athletic department, which is according to a university document that was obtained by Outside the Line. And this gets to Mark Hollis now, who expressed concern about what happened and stated that he understood how upset the victim's parents must be, and he couldn't imagine something like this happening to his own daughters. Several weeks later, the woman's parents met with Hollis and Associate Athletic Director Alan Haller, who told them they had spoken with the coaching staff and were told the incident had been discussed with, the basketball team, according to the letter. None of the players were reprimanded in any way, the letter states. The victim and her mother were told that there's not much that can be done to the players except to increase awareness of sexual assault and intensify the training program. The letter AllSuite wrote says Walton was fired. In an interview with Outside the Lines, AllSuite says little action was taken in regard to the players, and the report stayed within the athletic department, not to be investigated by anyone who handled student council or judicial affairs. And by the way, what you heard from Izzo, and one of the questions he was being asked, was why Walton left the team. Because it was not announced that he was fired, and he ended up going to play basketball. So it's not like they made a big deal of punishing Walton, and the players that were involved in the sexual assault case had no discipline whatsoever. And then there's an even worse account. Well, I shouldn't be comparing them, but there was another sexual assault account against recruits at that time, Adrian Payne and Keith Appling. And you can kind of understand where this is going. Another case involving basketball players where there's just questions about how it was handled and why they were not punished. And this goes on and on and on, and it includes stuff about Larry Nassar, who was allowed to continue to work even though there were complaints, more complaints about what he was doing to patients that he was seeing, and he was allowed to continue to work. So again, how did this all happen? And if you haven't read the Outside the Lines report, it's a must read. But I hope this gives you some of the nuggets from that report about why these questions are being asked and why this is such a big deal. And again, how a culture could be created and exist like this to allow Larry Nassar to get away with what he did for so many years. Now, another thing I want to address here. The Michigan State community, I think, for the most part, has responded. It's a tough situation. Everyone loves their university and does not want to believe that something like this could happen to a place they at a place they love so much. But based on the reactions I've gotten and things that I've read, including an op-ed in the student newspaper at Michigan State, the State News, and other interactions I've had with people on Twitter. This is from at MSU Dersh, who wrote to me on Friday. It seems to me that the MSU community is willing to own this. Lots of hurt happened on our campus caused by a sick mind, but enabled by those in power. Either that or the school and accountability so compartmentalized that he could operate in plain sight. A tragic fail all around. The reason I bring up this now is because literally, maybe less than an hour after I had that interaction on Twitter and read the op-ed in the State News, this Outside the Lines report came out. And the reason why they shifted things a little bit was because it specifically named Mark D'Antonio and Tom Izzo. And you don't have to go far from a major university when it comes to sports. The basketball coach and the football coach in many places have the most power in some of these states and get paid the most amount of money. And D'Antonio and Izzo are certainly up there in the state of Michigan. Now, I'm not saying everyone was doing this, but all of a sudden on social media, and that's not the greatest place to judge all situations, but all of a sudden that narrative started to change. And the people, Michigan State alums, immediately came out, again, not saying everyone, but many, immediately defending Mark D'Antonio, immediately defending Tom Izzo. That's why I want to get some of these facts out from the report. It's important to understand all this. It's still unclear exactly what Mark D'Antonio and Tom Izzo did wrong. It is not as obvious as what we read in the grand jury report in the state of Pennsylvania with Joe Paterno, where he was specifically told about an incident involving Jerry Sandusky, and by his own admission before he died, did not do enough. So hopefully more facts come out here. But it's pretty clear that D'Antonio and Tom Izzo have not done enough. These incidents don't happen to high-profile athletes on campuses without the head coaches knowing about it. And why are they going away? And I understand why people love Mark D'Antonio, love Tom Izzo. I've been around the Big Ten for a long time. I had high thoughts about him, too. In fact, I feel pretty stupid because I've given Mark D'Antonio publicly a lot of credit for the way he handled the four players that came up in a incident in the past calendar year. There was a lot of distractions there, and I gave him credit for swiftly punishing those players. They're not on the team anymore. And Michigan State turned their season around this year. But it's pretty clear that there's some problems here. And just because you might be a Michigan State alum and love those guys does not mean that you can't look at this objectively. I'll bring up the example of Bo Ryan. I went to Wisconsin. Bo Ryan merely had an affair. And it all came public. And there had been whispers for a while that I had heard, and I was honestly bracing for worse. An affair, what he did was not illegal. It's unclear if Mark D'Antonio and Tom Izzo have done anything illegal. I'm not saying that. But Bo Ryan, even though he didn't even do anything illegal, it certainly made you think twice about him and the messages that he's put out there over the years. And ultimately, he decided to step down in the middle of the season. And claim it's a retirement, and it has been. But if that had not been going on, perhaps Bo Ryan is still the head coach of Wisconsin now. He certainly, I think, would have finished at least that season. And would I like Bo Ryan to still be the head coach of Wisconsin as Wisconsin struggles through a season this year? Absolutely. But I'm not going to let wins and losses cloud how I think of these head coaches. And I get it. You love Izzo. I loved Izzo before that. But these people are not bigger than the university. And that's where we start to get in trouble. And even when we talk about university reputations, you have to handle these situations correctly, or you're just doing more damage than good. All right, we'll move on from Michigan State. Have plenty of football and most of the rest of the show. The debut of Sports Central here on Radio Row in Minneapolis will be devoted to football. Let's get to something that I think Bears fans will definitely want to hear. Last night was opening night at XL Energy Center in St. Paul. And John DeFilippo is the Eagles quarterbacks coach. He'll be coaching on Sunday with the Eagles, interviewed for the Bears head coaching job, and had a chance to talk to him. Now, if you saw the videos that were kind of circling around as he was interviewing for the Bears job, with him going over film and watching film on the Eagles website, very captivating, very impressive. And in my conversation with him yesterday, he was just as impressive. A very engaging dude who I think Bears fans would have loved. Not that they won't love Matt Nagy. But take a listen to this, starting with how he balanced the interviews, the job interviews he took with the Chicago Bears and the Arizona Cardinals, with also making a run at the Super Bowl.
Honest to goodness, once, and this is not coach speak at all, this is not coach speak, the day that, obviously I interviewed for the two head coaching jobs,
and Arizona once, and
Chicago.
Chicago,
and once those got filled, all my focus 100% was on the playoffs, and really, the only time I didn't focus on the task at hand was when I was in the room with the Cardinals and with the Bears. I've been very fortunate in my life that I have a one-day-at-a-time mindset. I'm very focused at the task at hand, and the quarterbacks have done nothing but what I've asked them to do all season in terms of buying into what we're doing, in terms of our plan, our coaching staff, all those things. And for me to have my mind anywhere but on the task at hand would be doing those guys a disservice.
But he did interview with the Bears and with the Arizona Cardinals and was asked what he learned from interviewing with the Chicago Bears.
You really learn, and I thought he did a good job of explaining the plan that, you know, I wanted to run in terms of how to run a football team, both. And it really makes you think how you want to run a team, both offensively, defensively, and in the kicking game. All facets of it, the weight room, sports science, nutrition, team travel, team discipline. You know, all those things that, you know, makes you really, really think about, what do I believe in? What am I going to lean and hang my hat on? And so it really makes you think about those things and put them on paper, and it's a great exercise. It's a fantastic exercise. And I tell you, you know, it's like anything. It's like the more bats you have, the better you are. And like I said, if it happens for me, that's great. If not, I have the best job in the world. So I'm very fortunate to be here with the Eagles.
Something tells me he will get another shot soon. And he was also asked just more specifically about the process with the Bears and interviewing with Bears general manager Ryan Pace.
They hired a great coach, and I'm so happy for Matt. You know, I thought Ryan Pace did an unbelievable job in the interview process. It was thorough. It was detailed. He had done his research, really knew a lot about me in my case, because I was obviously interviewing, knew a lot of background about me. I could tell he had done a lot of research about me. You know, Mr. Thompson, Mr. McCaskey, those guys were great. I had a fantastic time meeting with them. And, you know, I thought they did as good a job as I could do. And but they hired the right guy. They hired a great coach in Matt Nagy. Matt is a very progressive offensive thinker in terms of we're very similar in that way, and we're not afraid to think outside the box a little bit. Mitchell's been in great hands. Mitchell's going to have a really good guy coaching him. Obviously, Coach Helfrich is going to do a good job. You know, he's had some spread in his background there at Oregon. He's fortunate to have those two guys.
You guys obviously had your quarterback. Did you spend any time looking at Mitchell last year?
I did. I mean, I not a lot, because I knew Mitchell was going to go really, really high. I knew he was going to be a first-round quarterback. So I watched him. I graded him. But I did not divulge myself into the tape and the interview process and all that stuff like we did with Carson and with Jared Goff and with Paxton Lynch and those guys that were coming out, you know, that year.
Did anything else stand out to you at all about Ryan Pace and the time you spent with him?
Very smart, very bright, very even-keeled in a good way, and very prepared.
So very nice things to say both about Matt Nagy, Ryan Pace, and Mitchell Trubisky, who John DeFilippo looked at last year, but admittedly not too much because obviously the Eagles had Carson Wentz. I mentioned those videos he did on the Eagles website and talked a little bit about that and just how much he enjoys doing them.
Personally, I enjoy doing it for our fans because I just think it's really neat for our fans to be able to know what the quarterback's looking at. And the next time that sometimes maybe somebody's a little critical about a play, they're like, wow, it's not as easy as it looks. You know, so I think it's really a great learning tool for everybody. And I love doing it. I love talking football. That's my favorite thing to do in the world is talk football. So it comes easy for me. And I think it's great for our fans. It's great for, you know, fans around the National Football League to really understand, you know, what the quarterback's trying to see while he's out there with, you know, four or five guys rushing in his face all the time.
Usually when we hear about head coaching candidates, it's just typically it tends to be coordinators or previous head coaches. How flattering was it to get the attention that you got this year?
It was very flattering. I'll tell you what else is flattering is being interviewed by WGN, because I grew up at WGN watching the Cubs wherever I lived. Okay, so this is actually Harry Carey and all those guys. So this is, but no, in all fairness, it was great. I mean, it was very, I'd been a coordinator before, so that it wasn't like I hadn't called plays in the NFL before. So, but, you know, obviously when your work is recognized and people think that you've done a good job, obviously that's a positive thing, because that means obviously our football team's winning games.
How about that? A little love for WGN. John DeFilippo said he grew up in 17 different places as a kid. It moved a ton. His dad was a football coach, also the former athletic director at Boston College, but the one constant he had was watching the Cubs on WGN. So it was fun to have a conversation with him about his interview with the Chicago Bears. All right, we're going to take a quick time out here on Sports Central. We won't be taking a ton of breaks on this show, maybe just one or two every single show, but we will periodically take them. When we come back, Orlando Pace, the Hall of Famer, former Bear, will join us, and Paul Allen from KFan and the voice of the Minnesota Vikings as well. You're listening to Sports Central on WGN.
All right, let's continue this love fest.
There it is.
It's Sports Central with Adam Hoge.
No big deal.
On demand and in real time on WGNRadio.com.
Back here on Sports Central on 720 WGN, and it's time to bring in a former Bear for at least 1 year, but mostly known as the St. Louis Ram, Orlando Pace, the Hall of Famer, courtesy of Kay Jewelers. What's going on?
Not too much. We're here with Kay, and obviously being a Hall of Famer, you get a gold bust, a gold jacket, a bronze bust, and a beautiful ring from Kay, and our ring of excellence. So we're here supporting that and encouraging guys to go out and win Valentine's Day and stop by Kay and visit Kay.com.
Well, I'm looking at the ring right here. I'll tweet it out on my Twitter account. It's pretty impressive right there. Oh, let me put it on here. That is
Carter's.
This is literally Chris Carter's?
It was a replica.
Okay. I was going to say, he's probably wondering where it is.
Right, yeah. Absolutely.
That looks expensive.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's big. It's really nicely done. They did a great job designing the ring, and all the Hall of Famers are pleasantly are really excited about it.
Well, in Chicago this week, one of your former teammates, Brian Urlacher, has a chance to get all that fancy stuff. What do you think about his Hall of Fame chances?
Well, he's a Hall of Famer. It's just a matter of the process. I know he's going in with a star-studded group of guys, with Ray Lewis's of the world and Randy Moss's and a lot of those guys. So hopefully this year, like I said, I played 1 year in Chicago with Brian. He's a great guy, great pro, and hopefully he'll get that knock on the door on Saturday.
What do you remember from that 1 year in Chicago?
It was just, you know, obviously it wasn't, you know, obviously the best year. We didn't win a ton of games, but obviously it was a transition. You know, I decided to you know, finish my career there because I had a great deal of respect for Lovie Smith and what he was able to accomplish in the league. And he had a great group of teammates in there with Urlacher and Lance Briggs and so many of those guys. So it was a fun time just to get a chance to be a part of a different organization and really finish off my career.
And you knew Lovie from St. Louis, obviously.
Yeah, well, Lovie was actually, we go back further than that, he was a Ohio State coach when
That's
I was
right.
there at Ohio State.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so from that point on, I had a great deal of respect for him.
So I want to go back to part of the early part of your career because, you know, with this matchup this weekend, you get Tom Brady, who you faced in the Super Bowl, and then you got Nick Foles, who's in a similar situation as maybe a Kurt Warner was with you guys, and even Tom Brady that year you faced him in terms of, you know, both of those guys were somewhat unknowns, or one was undrafted, one was drafted late, and Nick Foles was drafted a little bit earlier, but he's bounced around a little bit. What, just from your experience in those times, what do you think Nick Foles is facing this weekend?
Wow. You know, obviously, you know, it's a challenge. I mean, it's a dream. My whole thing is you have to be yourself. You can't let this game overwhelm you when you go. You have to kind of cut out all the distractions and just go play football. I think they've done a great job based on their performance against the Vikings a couple weeks ago and having success. You have to come in with that same attitude. And I think they embrace that underdog, that mantra, hey, we're going to go in, we're underdogs. And they play well based on that. And I'm looking for a really good game from those guys if they can control their emotions and go out and play football.
Now, when you faced Tom Brady a long time ago, did you ever envision that you'd be sitting here on Radio Row how many years later and he's still playing in the game on Super Bowl Sunday?
You know what? It's unbelievable when you think about that Super Bowl, and that was really the start of their dynasty. And, you know, as a time, you're thinking, he's just a backup quarterback. Yeah. You don't know what guys will end up developing and being, and now he's the greatest to ever play that position. It's remarkable. I go from being bitter at some point in time to just, wow, you got to respect these guys because these guys get it done year after year. And as a player, you don't realize how tough it is to go back to Super Bowls, repeat, keep going back to Super Bowls, and then have that success with so much, you know, so many interchangeable pieces in your team. So you really got to tip your hat to their success and what they've been able to accomplish.
Can you remember what it was like preparing for Brady back then? I mean, he was an unknown, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, obviously as players, subconsciously, we kind of go, well, it's a backup quarterback. If he was that good, he would be a starter, right?
Yeah,
So we kind of, we were more concerned about Belichick, his scheme, what he could do, but the way Mike Marsh had us wired, it was all about us going out and playing our style of football. We really didn't care about who was the quarterback or what team we were facing. We had to go out and get it done.
Talking to Orlando Pace here on Radio Row at the Super Bowl. Is it weird seeing the Rams in Los Angeles?
A little bit. You know, obviously, when you play most of your career in St. Louis, and then all of a sudden your team is uprooted and they go to Los Angeles, you know, and I still live in St. Louis, so it was tough for a second there, but obviously once a Ram, always a Ram, and they've kind of embraced, you know, the St. Louis guys and the L.A. guys that out there and the same, and we're just the Rams.
What's the vibe in St. Louis since you still live there?
You know what? I think it's bitter. It was bitter. It was a lot of bitter feelings. The fans were really upset initially. I think with the success of the team, it probably made some fans even more upset, but then there were some guys that were bitter that was probably secretly cheering them on, but couldn't publicly go out and do it because, you know, obviously they want everybody to be better in St. Louis.
Well, you lived the glory days there. I mean, could you have ever imagined that when you're going through all that there would be a time where that team wouldn't be be there.
Yeah, it was tough. You think about, and you just brought up the Super Bowl where he faced Tom Brady. You know, obviously we won one Super Bowl in the city of St. Louis, but if you win two Super Bowls, does that team still be in St. Louis? It makes it make that decision a little tougher because the fan base is stronger and people are supporting that team, and that winning continues.
What do you think about this matchup this weekend? Because to me, the Eagles were among the teams that I cover the Bears, so I saw a bunch of teams this year in person, and the Eagles were the best team I saw, but they still had Carson Wentz that day. I think top to bottom, they might actually be the better team in this game, but the Patriots have Tom Brady, and that's the X factor.
And then you have to, you know, obviously when you look at, you know, you got to execute, but then the thing that the Patriots do well that a lot of people, they just don't beat themselves, right? They don't have foolish penalties or do you know, foolish things to lose games. And obviously if Philly goes out and they play equal games, Philly probably has more talent than New England, but until you play that game and you go out and execute, you got to beat a Tom Brady in the biggest game, and they've been here a number of times. You got to overcome a lot to defeat this team.
All right, I got to get your thoughts on Ohio State. Full disclosure, I'm a Badger.
Oh.
I was at the Big Ten Championship game.
Okay.
It was a great game. Yeah. In fact, actually, I was just happy it was close by the second half, because it looked like the first half that the Ohio State was about to blow the Badgers out. But, you know, that game ended, and I'm going, how do you keep Ohio State out of the playoff? They got to be in this thing.
Yeah, no, I'm mixed, because, you know, and you're a Big Ten guy, so you know, Big Ten was tough. You got Penn State, Michigan State even played well this year, and obviously Wisconsin, and you guys played well. But, you know, that loss to Iowa really hurt us a little bit. But, you know, I'm a firm believer that if you're a conference champion in the Big Ten, you should be in the Final Four. Totally.
I agree.
And I know it worked in our it didn't work in our favor last year because we weren't conference champion, and it happens. But, you know, I think we needed a representative at that table in the Final Four.
And once you're in, you don't know what happens. I mean, the way Ohio State was playing there.
Yeah, absolutely. We got hot towards the end, and that was the year we won it. The year we won it, we were the outside team looking in, and we went in and ran the whole thing. And Alabama was the same way this year. They were the outside team looking in, and they ended up winning everything.
Well, Lando Pace, thanks so much for joining us. It was, love watching you at Ohio State and in St. Louis. Man, you guys had some great teams with the Rams.
Absolutely.
It was a pleasure sitting down with you.
All right,
appreciate
thank
it.
You. Yep.
All right, from Orlando Pace to Paul Allen here on Radio Row. We keep it rolling on Sports Central here in Minneapolis at the Mall of America, and we bring in Paul Allen, the voice of the Vikings and a legend here in Minnesota. I'll call you that on KFan. It's been a weird couple weeks for you, man, hasn't it been?
Yeah, it's definitely been the cliched roller coaster. Yeah. You know, the Minneapolis miracle against the Saints would be topsy.
Yeah.
The trip to Philadelphia and the 38-7 that went the wrong way would be turvy. You know, the prospects of having the Super Bowl at U.S. Bank Stadium and the team with which I work and call games a step from it, and having an opportunity to do these shows on Radio Row and go to the game and everything and have the Vikings in it. You know, it was unbelievable. Honestly, you're right, man. I just, you know, I mean, I live it. But the way you just laid that out right there and I started to recall how the last 2 weeks has been. You're right, man. It's indescribable.
Well, we're obviously from Chicago, but I got a lot of family up here. I was talking to them when I got up here yesterday, and it seemed, tell me if I'm wrong, but it seems like the local feeling here in Minnesota is just, it's sort of like an extra punch that you have to host this game now.
For me, it is. You know, it's, and I love the Super Bowl. I mean, I just absolutely love the Super Bowl year in and year out. Through my 16 years of calling Vikings football, obviously we haven't been to one. I thought we had a great chance this year. But I can't speak, you know, for everybody en masse in this part of the country. But for me, I'm going to be square with you, man. We lose to Philadelphia. I'm on the team charter flying back. And instead of writing my radio show for the next day or figuring out how I'm going to sleep, I booked a 5-day trip to Las Vegas Friday through Tuesday. And that included backing out on kind of a quasi-obligation I might have had that I didn't completely commit to, where I would have made some money. Nope. Really, with all due respect, no interest in being around here this weekend. Turned down four seats to the Super Bowl. Not interested in going. And I'm going to go to Las Vegas. And whatever stage of Vikings-related grief is quasi-self-destruction, that's what I'm going to find.
Well, good for you, Paul. That sounds like a good weekend.
Hell yeah. Wine, women, and song. You want to come?
I kind of do, actually.
Might have to leave that ring behind. Yeah. We'll have a good time.
Hey, so let's talk about that Stephon Diggs play.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I've seen the video of you and the jubilation in the booth. It was an outstanding call, by the way.
Thank you.
And I don't even know how you could possibly prepare yourself for such a moment.
You really can. Yeah. I mean, you just do the job, and I've called 300-some-odd games, and, you know, there have been some big end-of-game moments in which I've been involved, and, you know, they generally go the wrong way of the Vikings, and into that series, I said to the analyst, Pete Bursich, a Chicago native, mm-hmm. by the way, Pete, we need a Minneapolis miracle. And he was like, Paul, this is where legends are made. So then we called a few plays. I remembered saying Minneapolis miracle, and then it came out twice, you know, as Pete was voicing his jubilation. And yeah, it's the most remarkable moment of my career, whether it's calling horse races, doing radio shows or calling Vikings game. It was just amazing.
So what happened last week then? Because and I got to say, tell me if I'm wrong. I thought early in that game in Philadelphia, something was just off with the defense before it was even close to out of hand. I don't know.
But we put them on a three and out early. You know, I mean, we scored, put them on a three and out. That's what we do.
There was a tackle, though, by Trey Waynes. I think it was on Zach Ertz, where he just sort of elbowed him.
No, middle of the field. You're 100% right. You're an elite football mind. Because Trey Waynes is not only the best tackling corner we have, he was, like, recognized league-wide for being an unbelievably good tackling cornerback. So here's Ertz on a third down middle of the field, and Waynes doesn't tackle him. He tries to shoulder hit him down and tries to just smash him and, like, blow him up like you're playing Madden. That's a great point, you know, because from that moment on, they couldn't find Ertz. They couldn't get to Foles, and then it just snowballed, man. And yeah, that's a good take by you.
Well, it's just, and I'm very familiar with the Vikings because I cover the Bears, and I'm not hating on the Vikings or anything. It's just I love that defense. Loved watching them all year, and something was just off to me. And when it was 14-7, I was just going, uh-oh. So how did give me the reaction in the following week? Like, how did they explain what happened in Philadelphia?
Well, Mike Zimmer, the head coach, when he had his press conference Tuesday, he said a lot of things, you know, and I got to give Mike credit for the way he did that press conference, because knowing him as well as I do, and we text a fair amount, Mike is taking a lot of blame for this. He really, really has been down on himself, like way, way down. I think he's snapping out of it now that he's interviewing these offensive coordinators and kind of getting back into the necessary evil of it. But Mike said, you know what? This defense that I've run for many years and made us maybe the best defense in the NFL this year, you know, paraphrasing, maybe I go to the well once too frequently on A, B, C, D, and E, and maybe I need to reevaluate that. So, you know, the Minnesota Vikings got handled on many levels in that game. That's the only way to put it. It's like, after the game, people are like, how depressed are you? Well, I mean, it was too embarrassing to be depressed. Then the depression hit Monday and Tuesday because I care about it so much and put so much of my life into it during the season. And then anger set in. I know this sounds like the seven stages of grief, but it seriously was, man.
Yeah.
Then anger set in like Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Then I got to the weekend and I'm like, great. You know, instead of breaking down all 22 on left tackle Nate Solder to see what he does well and what he does poorly, I think I'll salt my freaking driveway. I think I'll dust my bedroom for the first time in the last 3.5 months. So it's just getting through the whole thing's been tough.
Well, my cousin who lives in St. Paul, I haven't heard from him in a week and a half, so I'm kind of worried
Better
about
check
him.
On
I
him.
Think I need to check on him while I'm
yeah.
here. Well, I'll try to help you move on here. We're talking to Paul Allen, the voice of the Vikings and K-Fan here in Minnesota. I find the quarterback situation here in Minnesota this offseason to be incredibly fascinating.
Really? I find it to be an amazing problem.
Well,
it's
okay.
A conundrum.
Okay.
It gives me anxiety.
Okay. Well, maybe that's why.
You're a Bears guy, so you think it's fascinating because it might go the wrong way.
You know, it's kind of like where the Bears were last year, though. You could re-sign guys who are already on the team.
Yeah.
You could draft.
Except we're not going to overpay to trade up to 2.
Well, that's true. And you're also not at 3 to start with.
That's true. Coming from 30 would be a little difficult.
Yeah. Anyway, any idea? What's
I got no
happen?
Intel for you, ma'am. Yeah. And it's not that I don't have any intel because I'm trying to be covert with the situation. I don't think it's solved by the football team. I mean, they got Case Keenum, Teddy Bridgewater, Sam Bradford, all unrestricted free agents. There's a fourth quarterback named Kyle Sloter nobody ever talks about. And do I think he's going to be the 2018 quarterback? No. But guess what? They paid almost $500,000 to secure him to the practice squad and beat 6 teams to do it. So they like him. We have the draft. You have trades. You have free agency. It'll play itself out. As the locals go, the head coach loves Teddy Bridgewater and always has. And Mike Zimmer won his first division as a head coach with Teddy Bridgewater, a quarterback. Keep that in mind.
Yeah.
A full offseason with Teddy might mean he's the guy. We just almost went to the Super Bowl with Case. How do you turn your back on him? Depends on what the price tag is. Bradford, in my opinion, is better than both of them. How do you trust his knee? So you call it fascinating. I call it a quagmire.
Fair enough. How big of a loss is Pat Shurmur, who interviewed for the Bears job?
I guess we'll see how it works out next year. I mean, Pat's going to do a good job with the New York Giants. Pat's very smart. He's very even-keeled. Pat, you win 9 games for Cleveland, your nickname should be Shurmacek, because that's what he did. So he'll do well with the Giants. From a Viking standpoint, they're going to get Dalvin Cook back. Quarterback situation will be solved. Riley Reiff is an elite left tackle. Diggs and Thielen are receivers with whom you can win. The next coordinator is not exactly getting a bear covered.
Can I get an outsider's perspective from within the division on the changes that just from you seeing from the Bears, what do you think about Mitchell Trubisky from the 2 times you saw him this season?
Not real familiar with the new head coach. Last time I saw him, the Kansas City Chiefs lost Travis Kelce, and all of a sudden it was like the offense was just out the window.
Yeah.
So obviously 2.5-3 quarters of a wild card playoff game does not a career make.
Correct.
That was eye-opening to me. Was really hoping Vic Fangio would leave the division. Have an incredibly high level of respect for what Vic does, not only with the defense that has sustained a lot of injuries over the years. When the Bears came to U.S. Bank Stadium last game of the season, and I started watching back, because I like to do a lot of All-22 work, the season Kyle Fuller had, and the rookie from Alabama, name is escaping.
Eddie Jackson?
Yeah. The improvement he was showing. He's Fangio's elite. He's incredibly good at what he does. And from a Trubisky standpoint, it was weird. We saw him week 5, and he did enough to keep the team in the game with a chance to win, but he was skittish. When we saw him week 17, main man tried to stay in the pocket a lot more. Yeah. So he learned a lot in 2 months and change. And they had done work with him where I can see where it's going. He needs the full offseason to start and just put the Glennon charade in the rearview mirror and just go on with this guy. I think he's going to be good. His arm strength's good. His accuracy next year will be markedly better than it was this year.
And finally, happy with Jimmy Butler here in Minnesota? How can you not be?
Man, he was my favorite player when he played with the Bulls. It's like I'm doing my radio show here in the self-proclaimed state of hockey.
Yeah.
And I'm a Wolves guy, and I'm an NBA guy. And, I mean, I was in high school in the Los Angeles area during Showtime against Bird. How can you not fall in love with basketball at that time? I'm telling everybody, here's the deal. You don't get it. It doesn't matter outside of Karl Anthony Towns who you move to get this guy. Because everybody was like, no, you can't move Andrew Wiggins. Bull crap.
Yeah.
If they want Wiggins and they want Dunn and they want whatever, give it to them. Because this guy brings je ne sais quoi and attitude we have not had here since Kevin Garnett. So now that he's been here, I am so in love with him. Team is top 4 in the Western Conference right now. Just just took a dirty yell to Atlanta, which was kind of weird. But Butler is, he was my favorite player when he played with the Bulls. I don't think he and Fred, and I'm very close friends with Fred Hoiberg, I don't think he and Fred necessarily got it on that well. Hey, Jimmy needed to leave. Fred's doing a better job with that team, with Markkanen. Chris Dunn is performing at a level that I never thought he would, quite honestly, before he got hurt. And even with like Holiday and Valentine and stuff, Fred's doing a really good job with that team. Butler is the bomb. Yeah. And we are where we are now because of Jimmy.
Well, hopefully that's a trade that works out for both sides. That doesn't always happen.
No, it has. Yeah. It's like because LaVine had an ACL. Yeah. Now, Zach, I can argue Zach's better than Andrew Wiggins. That's another unpopular take in this market when I used to argue that. Because Wiggins was super special, number one overall pick. His perimeter defense is going to be the bomb. Whatever. I like LaVine more. That's my personal taste. But if you look at LaVine, the Dunn progression and the Markkanen pick for Butler, hell yeah, that was a fair trade.
Now, is the day-to-day talk storyline here Tom Thibodeau running players into the ground?
Not now. Okay. Not after the 38-7 at Lincoln Financial. I mean, with what happened at Lincoln Financial, where the Vikings always win in this town, from a conversational standpoint and like people meter and ratings and all that. Wild could lose 10 in a row. Thibodeau could play Carl Anthony Towns and Butler 41 minutes every single game and have their tongues hanging down to their knees. Nobody would notice until we get over this Vikings malaise.
Sounds like the NFL in Chicago, too.
All right.
Yeah. Hey, thanks a lot, Paul.
You're
thanks for
man.
Having us here in this great city of yours, love in Minnesota,
you.
And enjoy Vegas.
Have a good time.
All right.
Can't wait.
All right, Paul Allen there from KFan. I feel bad for that guy. He lives and dies with his Vikings, and good for him. He's going to go to Vegas this weekend. And he called me an elite football mind, so that immediately discredits everything else he said in that interview.
But great take by him.
And Mark Harmon now sitting here. Where did you just come from, Mark Harmon?
We've been walking around working hard here, Adam Hogue. Was down just talking to the Philadelphia Eagles at a moment with Jake Elliott, their kicker, who looks about 5'3".
The Lions Township
right?
product.
He's, right?
Yeah, 5'3". He is a little guy.
He is a ton. How do you hold yourself as equal with these 6'5", 350-pound dudes? And then he lied to me and said that they don't look at me like I'm any different. Yes, they do. You're the kicker, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we'll keep moving on the show. Want to bring Carmen because we're going to end most of these shows with our buried headlines. Get to some of the topics of the day. Let's jump right in. All right. I'm glad you're here, Carm, because while we've been on the show here, the Bulls are making some news. Supposedly, Nico Mirotic is going to be traded, possibly to New Orleans. I'm kind of confused about what's going on and why it hasn't happened.
So, the Bulls are going to trade Nico. Right now, apparently, they have a trade to New Orleans for Omer Asik, who's owned $25 million through 2019, which is not great, but they're getting a first-round pick. Middle of the first round, New Orleans could be in the playoffs. Not a great pick, but not the end of the first round either. But Nico wants the Pelicans to pick up the $12.5 million option that he's got next season, and apparently the Pelicans don't want to do that, which is odd because that's not a lot of dough, $12.5 million in the NBA nowadays.
And you're giving up a first-round pick.
Nico was coming in the draft right now. Nico's a top 10 pick. He's 26 years old. So I don't get it from New Orleans' standpoint. I guess they want the money free, but I wouldn't make the deal then. But they want, you know, you're getting out from under Omer.
Good deal for the Bulls?
I think so. First round pick. And you're getting Omer, and that means you can trade Robin Lopez. I think it's a win for the Bulls.
All right, we'll see if it happens the rest of this day. And if it does, we will obviously bring that to you tomorrow and all the reaction here on Sports Central. Okay, speaking of the NBA, Blake Griffin, real quick, goes to Detroit. Good deal for the Pistons.
They're going to be paying Blake Griffin $35 million. Now, that is a lot of money. And he's in the first year of a five-year deal. So you're locking yourself into Blake Griffin. The Pistons are doing this because the Pistons, at least in my mind, the Pistons don't sell tickets. And they're trying to get to be a middle of the Eastern Conference team that can maybe win a first-round playoff series, and they're all in on Blake. They're not trying to win titles. They're just trying to be competitive and be relevant and get people in the seats. I guess if that's what you're about, maybe the trade makes sense. But Blake's got a huge injury history. That's trouble in my mind. I don't like the deal from Detroit's standpoint at all.
Yeah, the injuries is what worries me. But I am selfishly excited that he's in the Bulls division now.
That's fun. See, Blake.
He's a fun player.
Blake's a fun player. I've never liked him, but I like rooting against him. You know, he's a Blake can shoot it. Blake can get to the rim. Blake's a good player. I just have never been, like, I don't look at him as a guy that really can transcend a franchise.
That's fair enough. All right, a couple Tom Brady items for you here. This was actually a big story yesterday. WEEI host Alex Reimer called Tom Brady's daughter, this actually happened last Friday, quote, an annoying little pissant.
Yeah, it's not the best.
You can't do that. But here's, so Tom Brady does a weekly call-in with WEEI and got wind of this right before he went on the air with these guys yesterday. Here's what Tom Brady had to say.
You know, I don't, I do want to say something. I mean, I don't want to get into the documentary much, but I did, you know, Stacey had told me that someone had made a comment about my daughter or something
Yes, yeah. Tom, we were just talking about it. It was Alex Reimer, and Jerry and I talked about it Friday. It was a stupid thing to say. We destroyed him for saying it. You can say whatever you'd like. Go ahead.
Well, I think that, you know, I tried to come on this show for many years with, and showed you guys a lot of respect. I've always tried to come on and, you know, do a good job for you guys. So, you know, it's very disappointing when you hear that, certainly with my daughter or any child. You know, they certainly don't deserve that. So,
no, Tom, no question. Yeah. As I said, Jerry and I talked about it on Friday. Stupid thing to say. He was suspended for it. He should be. There are certain things I think you understand. As a professional athlete, you're going to be criticized for what you do or on or off the field as an individual. But for a kid to be criticized is unbelievably stupid. There's no defense for it.
Yeah. So I'll obviously evaluate whether I want to come on this show again. So I really don't have much to say this morning.
That's fine. I understand. So that's totally fine.
I will maybe I'll speak with you guys some other time.
Absolutely fine. We understand. All right, Tom. Thanks. You too.
Completely fair way to handle it by Tom Brady, in my opinion. And then later last night at media night, which you and I were both there, he was asked about this and made it clear that he doesn't want Alex Reimer to be fired over this, which right now he's suspended indefinitely. Do you think the host who said that, Alex Reimer, deserves to be fired?
See, I think we need a whole new reframe. First of all, it's not a bad thing for a kid to be an annoying little pissant. That's what you do as a kid. I can be an annoying little pissant as an adult. I don't think the host was trying to make it out.
You shouldn't call him that.
You shouldn't, but like I don't think he was like meant it in such a way that the kid was just being a kid. He just didn't say it right. I don't think he should be fired. I think that Brady is allowed, obviously, to be upset about it because it's his kid. But I think at the end of the day here, we can have a conversation and move forward. There's a lot of noise around this that can go away pretty quick.
Well, and here's the deal. Outside of just whether or not you should be calling another person's kid that word, or criticize, or really saying, I would never say anything about any Bears player's kid. That's off limits to me. It was a joke gone wrong, but it was a stupid joke. I don't think he should be fired either, and I appreciate Tom Brady saying that last night. I will say this, though. For a radio partner, and one as important as the Patriots in New England, and Tom Brady as a weekly guest.
Not smart.
Just as a radio host, what an idiot. What are you doing?
Really dumb. Really, really dumb.
Yep.
I would agree with you there.
All right, speaking of Tom Brady, met with the media a little while ago. Were you over there or not?
I was.
Okay, so I was told he was wearing the gloves on his hands still.
Yeah.
I think he's just messing with us now, right?
Well, it's through Under Armour. We all know that now. So Tom Brady, amongst everything else, the guy's a marketing genius.
Good for him.
So Under Armour, the glove heals, apparently. So go get yourself an Under Armour glove and get healed.
All right, you having fun?
I'm loving it, man.
Did you have fun with J.B. Smoove last night?
J.B. Smoove was the highlight of my life, and I love that guy. And thank you for taking a picture. It was so thrilling for me to take a picture of you talking to him as well. But it's awesome, man. My first ever Super Bowl. I wish it was in a warm place, but not going to complain. This is cool to be here. Go Minneapolis.
It's a pretty good setup.
It's a great setup. I don't know anything different. Seems normal to me. It's awesome.
Well, we're in the middle of a mall. That's different.
Right. I just went to the Naff Naff Grill. Had some hummus. How can you beat that?
And we get to ride amusement park rides later.
Steak and Shakes to our left. Everything's gold. Everything's golden.
All
congrats
right.
on the show, Adam Hoge.
Thank you, buddy. You're going to be a big part of it. At least I hope you will be.
I look forward to it greatly. Thanks
for being on this first one. I know you got work to do.
We're going
to
talk to Jacob Truex, who's a fighter who could beat you up. Or Caleb Truex. Excuse me.
I did meet him earlier. He could definitely beat me up.
Yes. He's standing right in front of us.
Otherwise, I don't really know who he is.
Right, me neither, but that's okay. Right. He definitely doesn't know who I am. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, buddy. All right, I actually had a bunch of other stuff for you. There's a bunch of stuff I gathered for Media Night, which we were just talking about, and Media Night was way more productive than I thought it was going to be. I'd never been to one. Super Bowl Media Day is what it used to be, and it just kind of got crazy, and people dressed up in costumes and things like that. But I actually got a ton of good stuff, even from Alshon Jeffrey, of all people. Doug Peterson, Nick Foles talking about Matt Nagy, and also Brian Hoyer, former Bear, who has got a chance to win a Super Bowl ring again with the Patriots here as Tom Brady's backup. So instead of playing all that today, we're going to bring it to you tomorrow. We still got all week to preview this game between the Eagles and the Patriots, so a lot of good stuff there. You'll hear it on tomorrow's show. Also have Terrell Davis, the Hall of Famer. So two Hall of Famers on our first two shows. I think that's a pretty good start right there, as well as what gold medalist Hannah Teeter will join us tomorrow as well. So got a lot lined up for you all week long here on Sports Central. A lot of fun being here on Radio Row at the Super Bowl. And thanks for joining us on our first show. As always, if you miss any of these live, you can listen to it as a podcast. Go right now, subscribe on iTunes, TuneIn, the Google Play Store, anywhere you listen to podcasts, search for WGN Sports Central. If you put the WGN in there, you'll find it a lot quicker. WGN Sports Central, just search for it on there. You'll find it. Hit subscribe. This will be out every single day. Hope you make a habit of listening, and hope you enjoy this first show. Again, we'll be back all week from Radio Row here in Minnesota. We'll talk to you tomorrow.